if you just have like a typical 9-to-5 job, I don't know how you don't have some kind of side thing, like some kind of hope for a way out. And like you said, the first time you show up, it's like pretty overwhelming. I can't believe someone's paying me. But then now after a few years, it's just like clockwork, you know? And what I really love about having my own business is that the harder I work, the more efficient I am, the better I improve my systems and operations, the more money I make and the more free time I have. I mean, that is just awesome to me. That's so invaluable.
Augzoro is a media platform built to make you think better, start engaging conversations, and inspire you to do dope shit. We host podcasts like the one you're about to listen to, make videos, write articles, and share the work of interesting people. For $5 a month, the price of a bougie cup of coffee, you can become a supporter on Patreon to unlock exclusive content and early releases of Augzoro podcasts before they are released to the public. Go to patreon.com/Augzoro to get exclusive content today. Thank you for your support. Today, I sit down with Brent Jones, host of the Music Burrito podcast and owner of Jones Mulch Service based out of Minnesota. The Music Burrito podcast is one of the most unique podcasts out there, where Brent and his two co-hosts break down 6 songs from a particular music artist each week. What makes the show unique is that it flows from podcast to song to podcast to song in a playlist style fashion that lets the listener vibe with the music alongside the thoughts of the three hosts. The Amy Winehouse episode is my favorite so far, and the Music Burrito podcast as a whole is well worth your time. On this episode of the Augzoro podcast, Brent discusses his love for Sturgill Simpson, mistakes to avoid when starting your own business, the story behind discovering who his biological father is, and more. Without further ado, please enjoy this deep dive with Brent Jones. I figured a good place to start with this conversation would be Amy Winehouse, because I was just listening to your guys' episodes on Amy Winehouse for the Music Burrito, the podcast that you put out. And I actually also just watched the documentary recently too, Amy on Netflix.
That's nuts.
Dude, it was fucking wild. And I had no idea. I knew the name Amy Winehouse, obviously, and I knew that name was surrounded by fame and darkness and all this kind of whirlwind shit, but I never actually knew the details. So for me, I was wondering what drew you to Amy Winehouse in particular, what made you want to do a series on her?
We try to do an episode. We try to mix it up drastically, pretty much as we can from week to week. So the week before, we had done ELO, Electric Light Orchestra, who's a classic rock band from the 70s, and then like, let's do something newer that was really mainstream. And Amy Winehouse kind of fit the bill for that. It was someone that Dylan, one of my co-hosts, he was really into her recently. And like some of the bands that we do, we were big fans of, and those are the best episodes for us, obviously. But then there's other bands that we like to challenge ourselves with, or someone like Amy Winehouse, we didn't really know much about her. We're like, fuck it, let's watch the documentary and give it a shot. And we're comfortable talking about like any band or artist, you know, regardless of if I've been a fan of them for 10 years or if I just discovered them 2 years ago. And we just knew that she had an interesting story.
Yeah, she seems like such an old soul, because for whatever reason, I assumed that she was not alive as recently as she was. I had no idea she was releasing music in the mid to late 2000s up until she died. For whatever reason, in my mind, I thought that she passed away in the 90s or something. And then,
oh, really?
Yeah, I was like, Amy Winehouse, like, she just seemed like someone who was older to me, because I never really listened to her music when it was coming out.
You don't remember Rehab?
I knew the song Rehab, but I didn't know that it came out in 2006. For some reason, I just had this image in my head of like Amy Winehouse being mixed in with like the Nirvana era for some reason. So I was like, oh, she's like from back then.
And then in the documentary, just all that fucked up shit that goes on behind the scenes and the things that you see about a music artist, you hear the headlines when things are coming out, when I'm sure people were following it and they would get kind of the big blasts about Amy Winehouse. But then the amount of footage and close up personal footage in that documentary, I was blown away by it. And you guys did a great job of talking about it and parsing out her music.
Yeah, it was really nuts to see just the progression of, there was so much home video of her in that documentary where from the time she was like 16 years old, you can see her just a totally normal person. And then by the time she's 23, 24, she's just this fucking megastar with, it's insane to see the paparazzi that would surround her daily that she just, how do you deal with that? How do you get away from that? And it's no surprise that her fate ended up being what it was, where she just pretty much self-destructed, which is super sad.
Yeah, no one had her back. Even her dad, that was sad, that one scene where he came down on vacation. She was on vacation in some island. I think it might have been St. Lucia. She said she liked to go down to St. Lucia.
Yeah.
And her dad was coming down and she thought it was just him. And then he showed up with cameras and filming and stuff. And so it's like even her dad couldn't give her a break. It was like her boyfriend, piece of shit. Her dad wanted to make money off her too. I'm sure she had a lot of other people around her and maybe some good people too that just weren't saying anything, kind of just be an artist, go with the flow, and then didn't really realize everything that was building up.
Yeah, definitely. And I didn't realize what a megastar she was. Like, she's from England, so we heard Rehab over here, but then I didn't know all these other hits she had. And like we said on the podcast, on Spotify, her top songs have over 300 million listens. She's just huge.
Yeah. I started going back through her, and not even back through, just for the first time, I started going through her catalog in quarantine, because one of the things that I wanted to do was pay attention more to music. It had been a while since I listened to an album straight through, uninterrupted. I'm always shuffling songs constantly. I'll listen to a song for 2 minutes and I'll get bored if I'm walking to work. And so I'll just like have my head down on my phone, just trying to find that perfect song. And I realized I just never kind of just wrote out an album for years. And so I listened to Man on the Moon by Kid Cudi, one of my favorite albums. And then another one was the Back in Black, Amy Winehouse one.
Back to Black.
Back to Black. And I would just fall asleep to that. I would put it on and kind of just have the phone on my bed and just pass out. And her voice is amazing. Like the style of her voice and just the things that she's able to do is crazy.
Absolutely. I can relate to the album thing where it used to seem so intimidating to listen to a full album. It doesn't really take that long. Like a lot of albums are like 45 minutes. It's not that big of a commitment really. And that's how they intended for it to be listened, in a sequence of like, it's got ebbs and flows to it. And a lot of them tell a story.
Yeah. I mean, people have the attention spans because people listen to podcasts for, you know, sometimes an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours at a time. But I think the way the music industry is, songs are definitely getting shorter. Like I realize that a lot of the songs that are in the top 40, some of them are 2 minutes or even less than 2 minutes now, which is crazy. You'd never think that a full song would be less than 2 minutes and it would be mainstream.
Well, yeah, but it's TikTok like, now too. It's like 15 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. And you build songs. It's like you have to build it for the social media environment. So artists are definitely thinking, okay, what lyric is going to blow up on TikTok? What melody is going to sound good? Like what kind of videos will people create? Like, will this go viral in the social media landscape? That definitely kind of lends itself towards, I don't want to say the art is worse because of that. It may have suffered just because maybe people are trying to gear it towards shorter attention spans, but it's like a different layer that artists didn't have to consider until recently.
Sure. Yeah. It's evolving. Like music, that's what it does. It doesn't stop.
So what made you guys want to start the Music Burrito podcast?
So it was about a year and a half ago. And I was always getting these ideas in my head. I would write them all down. Even since before I ever started, like the typical 9-to-5 job, I was always like, God, I gotta fucking do something else. Like the thought of doing this for 40 years just sounds miserable. I gotta find a way out. So, I mean, I would think of random business ideas, product ideas. And then at one point I just thought about, I was getting really into podcasts and I had listened to some podcasts about podcasts. Like I think one time Joe Rogan and Sam Harris spent a whole episode just talking about the medium and how it's crazy just what it's grown into and all the advantages yeah. there is to podcasting. And it just totally mm-hmm. made sense to me. I'm like, because you can think on one hand that, oh, there's a podcast for everything right now. Like it's so oversaturated. But at the same time, it's like, there's still a lot of people who don't listen to podcasts yet that probably will in the future because it's kicks ass. And so I'm like, it'd be cool to do a podcast, but I would only want to do one if I could find a cool, unique idea. You know, I wouldn't just want to be like every other podcast because I wouldn't think that it would be successful. I'd want to do something unique. And my roommate, Dylan, who's a co-host with me, every night we would always have records on or just be playing random shuffles on Spotify. And we just have these awesome conversations related to music. I'm like, God, we should record these. Like, I think people would enjoy hearing these because we'd also talk to other friends about music too, but you can only do that for so long before you start BSing about other stuff. And it's like, it'd be nice to mm-hmm. really be able to lay it all out on the table. And so, and then I was thinking, because music was like the one thing that I think we have like a special take on and we're good at talking about and would enjoy talking about.
Yeah.
I'm like, why is it that there's all these other podcasts out there, but there's nothing really about music? I mean, there are podcasts about music, but not really podcasts that include music. And so that got me in going down the whole rabbit hole of music licensing laws and how complicated and expensive all that can be. And I'm just like, that's so fucking stupid. Like anyone at any time with Spotify and YouTube today can listen to any song they want, basically with the tap of a finger. And radio, like they can play whatever song they want, no problem, and talk about the music or talk about other random shit. So I'm like, there's got to be a way to make this happen. Anyways, I end up just buying the microphone and stuff, all the equipment we needed. I'm like, let's just sit down and start BSing about a certain band. So we started talking about Fleetwood Mac, and we just did like an hour episode on that. This is like last summer, and we sent it out to our friends and got a really good response. And so then we kept doing that for like, I think we did 7 total episodes last summer, just sending it out privately because we didn't have the music licensing rights. I'm like, we can just figure that stuff out later. I'm like, if it's a good show that people like, we'll find a fucking way to make it happen, you know? And people are really digging it.
I think that's the right approach, just to plow forward and just get your content out there and see if people like it. And then after that, you can adjust. On one of the podcasts I do, I use music and instrumental that was rebuilt by another artist, but it's the instrumental of, I think it's Young Thug and J. Cole, the London. And so I didn't look into music copywriting laws before I started using it as the intro to the podcast. And I started looking into it recently. I was like, damn, I should probably look and see, you know, now that more people are listening to this, what the copyright laws are. And so I'm going through it. I'm like, yeah, I should probably, you know, change it so I don't have to pay Young Thug $30,000 for like a licensing fee. Should his lawyer
or have to remove your episodes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And they could say our music is part of what drew people to your podcast. So maybe they try to claim a percentage of revenue, future revenue or something like that. And I understand from their end, you have to protect yourself as an artist. But I think you can plow forward in a smart way because a lot of people get discouraged, whether it's a podcast or starting a business or some other pursuit. A lot of people get kind of tangled up in all the logistics of it rather than just thinking, okay, what are the components that I need for a podcast? I need to record my voice, I need to upload it, and I need people to want to listen to it. If I can do that, then all the other shit will figure itself out.
And none of the other stuff matters if people don't want to listen to it. So that's the first thing you have to figure out.
Yeah, exactly. I like just putting shit out there that's low effort and experimental at the beginning and not really sticking with any sort of niche in particular. And it also depends on what your vision is. But I started with just music and then eventually branched out to interview other people. But the most important thing for me has been just keeping myself interested. I do podcasting too because I'm selfish as fuck and I like it, and I want to be interested when I'm talking to people, and I don't want to get bored of it. I know some of the tasks that are involved in it are very monotonous, and there's no way around that. But the actual podcasting, you got to find something that you think you're still going to be able to do 10 years from now. You got to use a framework that you think, okay, I'm going to have wiggle room so that I'm going to record an episode once a week for 10 years, and I'm not going to want to blow my brains out at the end of it.
Well, and that's why we're mixing in an artist like Amy Winehouse that we're not huge into, because we are thinking about the longevity of this, that if we're releasing one episode every week, like, we're not just going to use up all our best people right at the beginning. We got to kind of space it out. And
yeah,
we have a list of like 300, 400 bands that we're confident of talking about. So that's like 5 or 6 years worth right there, which is sweet. But yeah, it's just a matter of spacing it out. And then, yeah, another reason why I decided to move forward with the music burrito, because like I said, I did have a bunch of other ideas. And I'm like, I looked at it all and I'm like, well, what idea, if it worked out, would be the best? Like, what would make me the happiest? And I'm like, well, that's for sure the music burrito. I mean, it wasn't called the music burrito at that point, but I'm like, if my job could somehow be in the future talking about music, that would be the best thing in the world to me. So even if the chances of that happening are very low, I'm like, whatever, that's what I'm going to go for.
Is there a mindset or some process that you tap into when you're listening to music that lets you appreciate it more? Because I'm asking for myself, and then also I have a feeling the general public too, the actual art of what's being put out, I don't think people appreciate it as much. And, you know, I feel myself shuffling through shit and not really staying in the moment and not giving things a chance. Is there anything that you tell yourself or any mindset you have going into a new album where you say, okay, this is going to allow me to fully appreciate this for what it is, whether I like it or I don't, I'm at least going to be able to absorb it better?
Yeah, I try to just listen. I try to give everything a good chance, especially if it's a band I know that a lot of other people like. I'm like, well, why shouldn't I like this? There's no reason I shouldn't like it. One huge thing is listening on some nice headphones or having a nice speaker system. Like, that helps so much. Up until the past couple of years, I never had that. And since I've been able to listen on some nice headphones, like, it just allows you to completely absorb the music and let it take you over. I know one thing that I like is, like, I love hanging around people that I can have my full 3,000 song library on shuffle, and whatever comes on, people are going to be fine with it. They're not going to be saying like, hey, change it, this one sucks or whatever, you know? So I think just accept everything, just give it a chance, and just try to really listen. I don't know. Maybe it's just something that's part of me that I just tend to like all different types of music more than other people do.
Yeah, I was definitely one of those guys that you'd have probably hated that would have kept changing the song back in college, because in a baseball locker room, everyone, having the aux cord is such a privilege where you need to have the perfect song or else someone's just going to rip your phone out and be like, dude, this is fucking trash. And so every time, I'd always have so much pride in myself picking out the songs and be like, oh, this is the perfect song for this moment, or this is going to be a perfect song to get us pumped up for practice or whatever. It's like a privilege to be able to do that. But at the same time, if you're always looking for the perfect song, then you're never giving things a chance. If you're just constantly listening to, okay, this needs to be like hitting 100% of what I want or else I'm going to change it immediately, you never really get into that zone that lets you explore different types of music to just, you know, be like, oh, like maybe this isn't my favorite right now, but I'm just going to see what happens and listen to the next 4 songs on this album.
Yeah. I just think bonding with someone over music, even if you're just talking about it or listening to it together, is one of my favorite ways to bond with people. So the way I see it, the more types of music, the more different bands I'm into and that I know about, that's better for me because it's more people that I can go out and have great interactions with.
Yeah. And traveling too, you can hang out with people that don't even speak your language and you can throw on songs or they can throw on songs and you immediately can just sit there, start vibing out. Maybe you're drinking beers and you barely know how to speak Spanish. That person might barely know how to speak English, but you're just like connected because someone, one of you played this song and you're like, oh, this is like from my childhood or something, or this makes some connection, and it just becomes a language of its own.
Absolutely. Anyways, so then going back to the music burrito and how it progressed along.
Yeah.
So then it was like October or whatever that we had stopped doing it, and it just kind of got put on hold for a while. I had went to Europe for the winter, and like a couple weeks into being in Europe, I discovered on Spotify that you could mix playlists and, or in a playlist, you could mix podcasts and music. And it was that holy shit, like revelation moment. I'm like, this is it. We can totally do what we wanted to do, because we were so excited about what we were doing that we were like starting to explore like, all right, I mean, if we'd have to throw down however much money per episode to get the rights, like maybe that would be worth it. But I mean, that would suck to have to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I had actually emailed Spotify and been like, I had kind of proposed what we ended up discovering that we could do. I never heard back from them, but then yeah, we discovered that we could, if we broke our podcast up into segments and put them in the playlist with the songs in between, it was totally legal. The artists are getting paid for their streams and everything. And it's mm-hmm. sweet for the listener, because if you like the song, you can just like add it right to your podcast, or you can add it right to your library. So that was just an awesome moment. Then right when I got back from Europe in March, we just got after it right away and started pounding out episodes.
Yeah, I love how you guys have it set up with the, I didn't even realize you could do that until I started listening to the Music Burrito, where you could have an episode and then have a song and then do another episode and kind of have it mixed in between. And I love the way you guys talk about it and then set it up and then listen to it and then kind of come back and give your opinion and then go in to the next thing. It's like a hybrid album podcast experience.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's like I find myself, because it's a lot of work to do it all, but then, you know, it's the best part when you finally get to listen back. And like when I listen back, I find myself, it's kind of a nice break, I feel like, when you get to hear the song and then it starts to end, you're like, oh shit, like I wonder what those guys are going to say about it. I forgot they're going to talk again.
And like you said, it's different. No, I don't know anyone else who's doing it like that, where you're releasing these albums that are a mixture of podcasts and music.
Yeah. And there are, it's still a relatively new thing from Spotify. And like you said, I'm not aware of anyone else doing this. And so there's still some things I hope that they can tweak in the future to make it more accessible, especially for a first time listener. Like if you've listened before, you get the bit, you know how to do it. It's pretty straightforward. But if you haven't, like if you go into our playlist and you have shuffle on, then like it'll skip around within the playlist. It won't play in sequence. So I would really like Spotify, you know how in their playlist, they have the big green shuffle play button. Just right next to that, they need to have another big green button that says play in sequence. And that would solve all our problems, I think.
Yeah, Spotify, you got to figure your shit out. You got so much money, add one more button into the player.
Yeah, and if you just go to the Music Burrito show page, like it's only going to list all the individual segments, you know, the episodes. Within that, there's a link right away to the playlist. And also, if you go to like our Instagram page, there's direct links to the playlist there too. I just don't want someone to try to find our show and then they're like, what the fuck? Like, this doesn't work.
We'll link everything too in the podcast description and all the social media stuff like that. Who do you think is the most underrated artist that you've covered on Music Burrito? Someone that more people should be listening to, and there's something about this artist that just isn't widely recognized, but should be.
Coulter Wall would be one. That was our second episode. He's this Canadian outlaw country singer. He sounds like Johnny Cash. He's 24 years old. And most of the songs we play, he's 19, and he literally sounds like he's 60. He's a guy that should be huge in the country world. And then the episode 16 we did, The Nude Party, that's their name. These guys kick ass. I saw them last summer in Minneapolis in a really small room of like 150 people, and they just rock. They're like, they sound like they could be from the 60s or 70s. It's like a really fun old school type of rock and roll that I wish was a lot more prevalent in music today.
I miss the going to venues. I mean, it's been 3 months since the last concert, which I shouldn't be complaining because there are probably people that haven't been to concerts in over a year because, you know, you don't know that shit's going to shut down. But just imagining whether it's a 150 person venue or 30 person or 10,000, just there's nothing that replaces the in-person music experience. And like what you were saying, the way that you listen to music can change it so much by using better headphones, by going to a concert and you're like you feel the sound literally running through you because there's 12 speakers on each side of the stage. Nothing can replace that energy. And then like the imperfection of a live performance.
Yeah. And just the raw, just seeing them right in front of you, especially if it's a smaller band that you can see in a small venue. And another thing you said, like, how can you enjoy music more? If you see a band live and then I go and listen back to their albums afterwards or their top songs, it's a lot of the time a totally different experience once you've seen them live. Like that can just change everything for it.
What is a band like that for you that seeing them live completely changed your perspective?
That's going to be Sturgill Simpson.
Oh yeah.
I was already big into him, but seeing him live took my love for him and his music to a whole nother level.
Yeah. Because we were talking about Sturgill Simpson before the podcast and I haven't really listened to him much. And most of what I know about him comes from the few times that he was on Joe Rogan. And I've listened to a couple of his songs, but I went back before the podcast and went through one of my favorite songs that I heard from him was Brace for Impact.
Oh yeah, that one kicks ass.
The lyrics were, one day you wake up and this life will be over. Every party must break up for burdens to shoulder. We're dying to live, living to die, no matter what you believe. And all of us cry for the ones we must leave. And I was like, damn, that's fucking sick.
And then it gets even better. So he says, so go out and live a little. Bone turns brittle and skin withers before your eyes. Make sure you give a little before you go to that big unknown in the sky.
Yeah, and I checked out the anime films that you mentioned because he has it on clips in YouTube too. And it's like, it's crazy.
The sound and fury.
Yeah, it's like it's so much imagery with weapons and titties and drinking and like psychedelic shit, like Mad Max-esque almost, where you're just like, what kind of fucking world does this guy see when he closes his eyes? Because you wouldn't really pair those two with the type of music he creates. But then you watch the video and for me, I was thinking, holy shit, this is so different. I didn't even know what to expect or what to think the first time I saw it. I was just kind of paying attention to everything that was going on.
It's a lot. So yeah, he had completed that whole album. I think on Rogan, he said that he recorded that in like 2017. And then he decided to get in touch with some Japanese anime creators and that delayed the album release for like a year or two because it was like millions of dollars to make all this anime to sync up with the music. And it's a cool thing that I've never seen another artist do. He was in the Navy when he was like young 20s and I think he spent some time over in Japan in that area. So that's where that influence came from for him. But he's just such a cool guy. Like I already loved all his music. And then you listen to him on Joe Rogan and it's like, he's just so down to earth. And I feel like he's got more personality than anyone else in music.
Yeah. And I mean, he seems like he's super underrated because just from what I've heard, his sound is crazy. He has insane visuals and he has under a million listeners per month on Spotify. And you would think that, you know, someone like him, because it seems like his following is pretty strong too on Joe Rogan. Like he always talks about how his fans are at like the absolute best and people follow him all over the country. There has to be something about him too that he does well, but just isn't mainstream yet. For whatever reason, the general public just hasn't latched on to Sturgill Simpson.
Well, he had started out, he came on strong in like 2014 with the style of country music that reminded people of like Waylon Jennings and some of those legends from back in the day. And I don't know what exactly happened, but him and like radio country, which is just two totally different things. Like Sturgill was not going to play their game or whatever it is that they do. And he was just going to do his own thing. I don't think he's a guy who likes to be controlled. Like he hated being under his record label and all that. And so his first couple albums were very country. He was doing some cool experimental stuff. Like in his second album, there's like dubstep-y sounds and stuff. And then in his third album, Sailor's Guide to Earth, that's probably my favorite one by him. And that one had a whole horn section throughout it. And the whole thing is addressed to his newborn son. Really awesome album. And that was the one that I started getting into him. I heard his cover of In Bloom by Nirvana. Have you ever heard that?
I haven't heard it yet. His cover of it.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so that was the song that I just would listen to over and over. And then I saw that his album was up for Grammy of the Year alongside Justin Bieber, Drake, Adele, and Beyonce. I'm like, holy shit, I got to check this guy out.
That's a fucking interesting combination right there.
So then I bought that CD because we were going on a ski trip, a road trip out west to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and listened to it on the way like numerous times, just over and over. I'm like, I can't believe how fucking good this is. And then, yeah, I went back and listened to his Joe Rogan episodes and I'm like, this guy is just awesome. And then a couple years ago, he was playing a festival like 3 hours from where I live. And me and 11 other buddies went down there and it was just an amazing weekend. All the other bands there, it was called Hinterland. There were bands like Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats, Blackberry Smoke, Churches, Tosh Sultana, Tyler Childers, all these unbelievable bands, all this just fantastic music that I didn't even realize existed. Like I've always been pretty big into older music. I've always felt that like something older that I haven't heard before is just as new to me as something new that I haven't heard before. And I didn't realize there was as much good new music as there is. So that weekend for me, and then especially just capping it off with Sturgill Simpson, he was the final show and he just fucking, it was unbelievable to see live, just rocking out like crazy. This was when he was kind of shifting away from his country. He didn't really want to be the savior of country music. So his last album was just like straight psychedelic, hard rock and roll. And I don't think I'd be doing the Music Burrito if it wasn't for him and that experience, because that just led me into so much other music and really made music a bigger part of my life. But then this past winter, it was really awesome because then he was going to be doing a tour over in Europe to get ready for his big US tour. And so I got to see him in Berlin, Germany, in a small club of like less than 1,000 people. Just, I was 8 feet away from him. It was just unbelievable.
Oh, hell yeah. What brought you over to Germany?
So I was in Italy, actually, and I've been dating a girl from Italy for like 2 years and 3 months now. And so, yeah, I was just over there visiting her, and that was one of the places he was going to be playing because he wasn't going to Italy. So we just flew there for the weekend, and it was awesome.
So you've gotten to experience abroad a little bit through this relationship, kind of like the lens of other cultures.
Yeah, that's been really cool because, I mean, I grew up on a farm. I grew up around a small town. I didn't go on a plane until I was like 22 or 23. And then, yeah, all of a sudden I'm dating an Italian girl. She had came here as an au pair. She was living just like 5 minutes away from where I had grown up. And so, yeah, we started dating. Eventually, she had to go back to Europe after her year was up. And so then I went over and visited her. I had gone last April for a month. And then this past winter, I went there for 3 months. And I'm just living. She lived out in the country too on a farm. But instead of corn and soybeans, they're growing grapes to make wine.
They can get drunk while they work.
Yeah. Well, it's like most people go to Italy and like you go to Rome for a few days or whatever, which is fucking sweet. But like I got this really authentic Italian experience where I was only surrounded by Italian people. We'd go out to the bars and clubs around her hometown and I'm the only American in there. It's a weird feeling, but a really cool experience.
Yeah, I need to go back to Italy. The last time I was there, I was lucky enough to go with my parents. I was only 12 or maybe 13 years old. And we actually met up with relatives in my family that stayed in Italy their entire lives. And some of them may have passed away by now because it was almost 14 years ago. But at the time, my grandpa, Alex, came over from Italy to America and became a judge. But a lot of his family stayed back in Italy. So we were lucky enough to get the true kind of like family home cooked meal
nice.
Experience, just pasta until I was shitting it out my nose, literally, like just so much food. And I was drinking wine that one of the men that was kind of in this group was just like, oh, I made this wine myself. There's no sulfites in it, so it doesn't get you drunk. And my parents were like, oh yeah, sure, whatever. But I mean, I was definitely pretty drunk. And I was 12. And I guess that was the first time I ever drank anything. But just like the whole experience over there was amazing how different the culture is. I didn't really appreciate it until thinking back once I entered the professional world after college, because everything is just a different pace here. It's more about the hustle. Mm. You know, everyone is trying to constantly make something of themselves, and it's really hard to value yourself outside of work. And from going to Italy and then also going to Greece later in my life, it's just like a different change of pace. I don't even know if it's better or worse. It's like, it's just a different way of seeing yourself as a human being. You can relax and have a good time and still be valuable. Whereas in New York City and a lot of the metro areas in the United States, if you're not doing something, people are like, why not? Like, why aren't you busy right now? Like, you lazy fuck, like get back to work.
Well, where did they live in Italy? What part of the country?
I think it was Amalfi Coast, somewhere in the Amalfi Coast, if I'm remembering correctly.
Where's that? Like north or south?
I don't know where it is on the map.
Okay.
But yeah, it was, it kind of looked like just your generic Italian town on the coast. Like it was nothing. If I looked up a town in Italy, in Amalfi Coast, it probably looks a lot like that on Google Maps. I'm bad with geography, so I don't know exactly where it was in Italy.
I think it's so good for a person because obviously there's things that they're doing better over there and there's things that we do better here in America. But like just by going and seeing these other places and experiencing it, you can pick up on little bits like, oh, they do this. This makes way more sense. I'm going to start doing things that way. And you can learn a lot from it. And the food, I mean, you just, I don't know how much you remember from when you were 12, but everything is just better. Like you can't, it's hard to describe. It's just all better quality is the main thing.
I remember it was very good. I remember it was endless amounts. There was just constant pasta and meats coming towards the table, and saying that you were full was meaningless because you get food on your plate anyway, which was great.
Yeah, it's like, shut the fuck
yeah,
up. And
yeah,
eat.
Yeah, eat this, you little bitch. But yeah, definitely, I don't appreciate food nearly as much, I'm assuming, as people do in Italy, because it's more like I go to Trader Joe's and I make the same shit every night, especially in quarantine. I'm just like, what's the quickest to make? I'm going to throw some chicken in the Instant Pot.
Well, that's just the thing about being a single guy, too. It's like so hard to... It takes so long to cook everything, eat it all, clean it up by yourself versus if you can share those duties, it's got to be so much more convenient.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so about efficiency. Like whatever is the quickest to make. And I really would like to learn how to actually cook good meals that I would be proud of and not just throw shit together. For myself, I don't really care if it's edible and it's healthy relatively, I'll eat it. But I would feel bad serving what I make to other people, making them eat it with a lack of flavor.
Sure.
Are there any kind of the societal differences with the food and family, but is there anything else that sticks out to you between Italy and the US where you think maybe the US could borrow some ideas from Italy?
Well, you go there and like you don't see overweight people like you do here. Like that's one thing that my girlfriend and her friends and everyone in Italy and I think largely in Europe, they just cannot believe how many overweight people there are in America and just how normal it is. Like you just think, I used to kind of just think that, oh yeah, you get to be like 50, 60 years old. Like, yeah, you just get a big belly. Like that's mm-hmm. just what happens. And then I go there and I see all these men that are that age that look great. I'm like, yeah, how do we not take that more seriously?
Yeah, they're going out. Like, you have 56-year-old men that are just like super active, going out, having a good time. And in America, you're right, it's like that accepted, I can let myself go because I've reached the age of 45 and, you know, I've earned this belly. It's just it's a different mentality. And it's kind of depressing when you think about it. Like, I saw a stat recently that we have more people that die from obesity now than starvation in America, which on one hand, you could look at it and say, oh, it's good that we have all this food. But on the other hand, we can't control ourselves and we don't actually appreciate food. We just fucking eat whatever's in front of our faces.
Why are we eating more than we need to and eating just like processed shit? Like, everyone here thinks pasta is so bad. My girlfriend's like, that's fucking crazy. Like, we eat pasta all the time. Well, like, we always use sauces here and stuff. They don't use that at all. It's just straight olive oil and Parmesan. And then they don't like, they barely ever use their microwave. You know, they just cook fresh and it's, I mean, they have advantages because of their geography. Like, it's just way easier to get food from one place to another because it's a smaller area versus like getting food from Arizona up to Minnesota. I mean, that changes the logistics of everything. But I think a lot of people don't realize about Italy is that it's a really bad economic situation. It's not uncommon to live with your parents into your 30s.
Really?
Which is something we probably take for granted here. Yeah, I mean, I guess houses are more expensive than they are here and incomes are way less. And it's weird because Italy, like, think about, they have beautiful mountains, Mediterranean Sea, amazing food, amazing culture, history, beautiful language, beautiful people. They should be one of the richest countries in the world, but like, how can it be?
It's beautiful. And, you know, same thing. I was in Greece when I was in my early 20s and it was kind of the same thing. They were under such economic distress and they're one of the most beautiful countries in the world, like Italy. And they're basically paying people to move there and getting, you know, anyone they can to invest in the economy. And it's like, how, like what was the process of this country becoming in economic despair behind the scenes? I didn't really understand what was going on in Greece other than they were just doing terribly economically. Italy, same thing. I don't know the details, but just if you take that out of it and you look at what those countries have to offer, it doesn't match up. It's such an attractive place to want to go.
Yeah, I think Americans should be grateful for the opportunities we have here.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Being in a place like Brooklyn and right next to New York City, I just assume that this is like the rest of the world is like this. I can have anything at my doorstep in one day on Amazon. I can order food and get it in 20 minutes. I can, you know, see a Broadway show. I can go to one of the best bars in the country. I can see the best concerts in the country. Every artist comes through New York City. It's like a hub of fashion and creativity. And it's hard to get yourself outside that sometimes. You have to remind yourself that I literally live in one of the best cities and the best countries in the world. Mm-hmm. And not everyone has this shit. Like, it's actually like 0.00001%, whatever it is, of people in the world that have the opportunity to do that. So I definitely need to get better at reminding myself of how great it is to just be able to be in the city, even if rent is, you know, $20,000 a month or whatever the fuck it is now. But it's just like a cultural hub that doesn't exist in other places, for better or worse.
I think she says starting a business there, you're going to be taxed like 70% or something crazy.
Yeah. It's, I don't know exactly what it is. I actually just opened an LLC for Auxoro for the podcast that I run. Cause before that I was just doing it kind of off the books, making a little bit of money, but I actually just opened the LLC. So I'm going to figure out all that stuff. But speaking of starting a business, you mentioned before the podcast that you quit your job as a city planner to start what is now a mulch business. Because there are probably people listening to this podcast that are either starting their own business or considering starting their own business. What is a mistake that people are likely to make when you start your own business, and what can you do to stop making it?
The first thing that comes to my mind is the biggest mistake people make is not actually doing it, like having an idea of a business they want to do and not even ever doing it. Like the biggest battle is just fucking doing it. But once you get going, I'd say like if you don't keep good records, like it's so useful for me to be able to, anyone that contacts me, like I try to be as detailed as I can with their information and everything that we did and how it went. Another thing is just make sure you're on top of your communication. I mean, I'm responding to people as soon as I can and they love that. I mean, that's just huge. It's pretty simple. Just do a good job, have good communication, and the business will keep coming. Yeah. So I had gone to college to be a city planner and I did that for like 4 years. I worked in a small town and then I worked in a little bit bigger of a city, and it was fine in a lot of ways. It was a nice steady paycheck, good benefits and everything. You know, all the reasons I kind of went into having a city job, those were things that were attractive about it. And I was like, okay, I like geography kind of, and I like working with builders and that stuff like that. Cities and how they grow has always interested me. But then once I got into it, it was like just so much other BS. Like I ended up having to deal with people calling. I was like the complaint guy where people would call if their neighbor's grass was too long and they have like too many cars or boats parked at their house or whatever. So I was just constantly having to be the bad guy, and I had to be like the rule guy too, which is like, I didn't really fucking care that much about some of these things. I mean, I did my job. If I'm hired to do something, I'm going to do a good job at it. But it was just like all day, the person who was complaining to me was not happy. And then the person that I was telling to take care of their shit, like clean your yard up, they're not happy with me either. So that was just a pain in the ass. But I had started a mulch business on the side, Jones Mulch Service, just as a way to make some side cash. I figured that's something I could do in the evenings, on the weekends, because I had done landscaping work all throughout college and I liked it. I liked working outside, being active. And then, yeah, it was getting to a point too where it was like, I think if I really put some more time into this, I could have more success with it. And yeah, right when I quit my job, I quit my job like for a multitude of reasons. So I could put more effort into that. So I could see my girlfriend, because I'm like, okay, if I'm going to be dating a girl from Italy, there's going to have to be a fair amount of back and forth. I'm not going to be able to have a city job where I get 2 or 3 weeks off per year or whatever. It's just not going to work.
Yeah. You need that full August vacation.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the European getaway.
And so that's what I'm thinking too with the music burrito. If that could end up being a job, like that allows me to pretty much be able to work from wherever. So that's sweet. Yeah, it's been awesome though now, because mulch is super busy for like 2 or 3 months. I mean, it's like insane. It was hard this past couple months to be able to keep up with releasing the podcast. But now that I'm kind of past that peak, I'm excited to be able to just put all my time into the podcast and try to start promoting it more.
Yeah. It seems like mulch is a good business to be in, because no matter how the economy is doing, people still need to take care of their yards. They don't want their yards to go to shit.
For sure.
And maybe they're willing to let it go a little bit longer if they're struggling, but still it hurts to walk outside your house and think, damn, my yard looks like shit. Even if it costs some money to renovate it and fix it up. What attracted you to mulch? Was it that you started looking into it from city planning, or what was kind of the impetus for that?
I mean, when I worked landscaping jobs back in the day, like we'd do mulch sometimes, and then some days we'd build patios and retaining walls or do rock and stuff. And I always liked the days that we did mulch the best. I'm like, it's not, you know, mulch isn't like heavy like rocks. I'm like, it's not that bad of work. It's just, it's a lot for a homeowner to do themselves. And I'm like, there's all these landscaping companies that do anything. I'm like, why don't I just focus on one thing? I don't need to be that busy, because at that time I was just thinking it was going to be a side thing for me. You know, I can go and do a job in 3 hours if I get a few guys to help me in the evening versus like building a retaining wall. Like you need to be there all day and stuff. So that was why I started it originally. And also just because I love when I leave a job, like it looks amazing. We get there and it looks like shit and I go and the customer is so happy. Like that was also the weird thing too, because I'd be like city planning during the day where people are just fucking pissed at me. And then I go and make someone's yard really nice and it's nothing but, oh, thank you. It's amazing. I'm like, what the, why am I doing this other shit?
Yeah. I imagine that's hard to deal with when people are constantly mad at you and you're showing up at a job where you know people are going to be pissed at you, like city planning. I've never been in the service industry or a type of job where I'm kind of like dealing with complaints all day, but I imagine that it's really hard not to get defensive quickly when you're representing a company and you kind of just have to like smile through your teeth and be like, all right.
The phone rings and you're like, fuck, you just hate it. Hate to see it. And then, but yeah, I mean, I'm pretty good at keeping my cool. So I was good at the job, I think, but I think a person can only do that for so long. I certainly don't want to be doing that my entire life.
Yeah. I don't know if you felt the same way, but when I was going to business school at University of Richmond down in Virginia, when I, having gone through the business school and then having started my own company and filing the LLC and doing all the taxes and kind of setting up the paperwork, the business bank account, I realized that I went to business school that never taught you how to set up a business. Like they never said, okay, if you don't want to work for an accounting firm or an investment bank and you actually want to start your own business, this is all the shit that you need to take care of. And, you know, this is how you set up your own bank account. This is how you track your expenses. You know, this is the best software to set up your LLC, all that shit. I was just like, why does a business school not just have a course, a 101 course that everyone has to take and say, hey, we know a certain percentage of you are going to be entrepreneurs or at least try to do it. So we'll show you how. But I was just realizing, I'm just watching all these YouTube videos how to do it on the fly. I don't know if you felt the same way when you were starting it.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that school doesn't teach you that they probably should. But yeah, it wasn't really that hard. I mean, like you said, it's just a matter of researching on your own and figuring out what you need to do and then actually going through and doing it. And then it's just super weird though, the first few times that a customer contacts you and it's like, holy shit, I can't believe they want me to do this for them. You know, I was like fucking 22 the first times when I was going out.
Yeah. It's a rush the first time that someone offers you money to do something directly, whether it's like when you're not working for another company that's taking money off the top, when you're the CEO of Jones Mulch Service and you go and fix someone's yard and then they hand you a check and you're like, oh fuck, this is sick. I get to,
yeah,
this is mine. I gotta pay whatever taxes, but you know, I am in charge of this income. And I felt that a little bit too when I started doing podcast consulting, where I would help other companies set up podcasts and I was like getting paid to set something up directly where it's not a salary from another company. It's like, you did this for us. This equals that money.
Yeah. You're getting paid for your skills and knowledge. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. It's a great feeling that I think not enough people have, because if they did get that, I don't think they would stay at their 9-to-5 job for very long, or they would at least start to look for a way out of it. Because once you put that connection together and you say, okay, I have this skill and people are willing to pay X amount for that, I don't see how you just don't get addicted to optimizing that and being like, okay, this is my path to freedom. I can do X amount of work, have X amount of free time, and I can cover my expenses and have money to go travel, see my girlfriend in Italy, take off a month from work here, still be fine. Like I don't have to show up at the office every day. It gets addicting to think like that.
If you just have like a typical 9-to-5 job, I don't know how you don't have some kind of side thing, like some kind of hope for a way out. Like you said, the first time you show up, it's like pretty overwhelming. I can't believe someone's paying me. But then now after a few years, it's just like clockwork, you know, and what I really love about having my own business is that the harder I work, the more efficient I am, the better I improve my systems and operations, the more money I make and the more free time I have. I mean, that is just awesome to me. That's so invaluable.
So I don't have a transition for this, but you mentioned that you found out that your dad is not your biological father. Can you
tell me? Pretty insane.
Yeah, dude, that is fucking insane. When I read that, I was imagining if my dad called me and was like, hey, by the way, I'm not your biological dad. How did that conversation come about? What was the buildup to that?
So I haven't really told many people about this yet because I just haven't known how to. It's such a weird thing to just, you know, I'm not going to like post a Facebook status about it. I figure if I talk to you about it, like people can at least hear it from me versus it just like going around and being hearsay, you know?
Yeah.
So I've always been interested in my ancestry. Like I come from a small town with a strong Czech and German ancestry. And like my great, great grandfather settled on the farm where I grew up in the 1800s or whatever. So I've always been interested in that. And then like I started dating a girl from Italy and I'm like, God, I wonder if I have any Italian in me because who the fuck knows? And then Ancestry DNA or whatever, they had their tests on sale for 50% off for Black Friday. So I'm like, fuck it. I've always been interested in doing this. So I ordered it and you just spit in a tube and you send it in. A few weeks later, they email you your results. And I get it back and there's like a lot of Norwegian in there. I still had like the Czech and German and that stuff. I'm like, what the fuck is this Norwegian? Like I never remembered hearing anything about that when I was younger. And so I just casually forwarded that to my mom. I'm like, what's the deal with this? And she just didn't say much. She's like, oh, can I come over today after work? I'm like, sure. So she comes over and like sits me down. It's like, I got to talk to you about something. I'm like, what the fuck is this going to be? Tells me that my dad was unable to have kids. So they used a sperm donor to have me. Holy shit. Just crazy thing to find out at age 25.
That's wild. I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine what my response would be to that. Did your mom or your dad, did they have a plan to eventually tell you? Or was it more like they could tell you were eventually going to find out if you went down this rabbit hole? So they kind of just told you.
Well, they said that when they had originally done it, they had planned to tell us when we got older, I guess. I don't know if there was a certain time, but then they got divorced when I was in like middle school and not a good relationship there at all. Like they don't talk or anything. So obviously as time went on, like, I guess they just never told us. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like I had also been getting like messages on that Ancestry account where like, I would have found out the next day if she hadn't come over and told me. So as far as I'm concerned, like I never would have known, but I don't know. They said that back then, like they didn't really tell you how to handle that. Like it was almost encouraged to just keep it hush hush. Mm-hmm. Who knows, because of like church and stuff too or whatever.
Yeah.
Like nowadays, I guess they're more encouraged to tell kids as early as they can. But yeah, it was really tough for a while after that. Cause it's like, you just kind of replay your whole life through this new lens. Like everything you thought you knew was about your identity and like how you were born and who you are. It's like, you have to just reconsider everything.
Do you feel the drive to reach out to this other person? Or is it more just like a technicality where you're secure in who your dad is, but you just know his sperm didn't make you?
Yeah. Well, as far as my actual biological father, I was able to find out in like 10 minutes with the power of the internet after she told me like who it was. And he lives like fucking 15 minutes away from me.
Oh, no way.
I guess there's like a Facebook group of like 30 plus half siblings that I have that are also from his sperm.
So he, cranking it out back in the day. He was, doing a side hustle, trying to start his own business. He's like, shit.
It's like he's
50 bucks a pop.
He was just a college kid. Yeah. He's just a college kid getting some beer money probably. Like it's just crazy to think that that's how I was actually made. But yeah, I don't know. At some point in the future, maybe it would be interesting to see if there's like certain things about me that, oh, that's where I get that or that's why I act like that. But at this point, I'm not really ready for that or interested in that right now, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was one thing that really made me reconsider a lot of things in my life. Like that was a big motivation for me to actually go through and quit my job. Like, fuck it. It's pretty weird how I got here. So let's do some crazy shit and keep life interesting.
Yeah. Like the story that you thought was the story of you for so long turned out to be different. So then that kind of sparked a fuck it mentality where you're like, how do I know that the story that I told myself would be my future isn't bullshit too? So not that the story of your parents using a sperm donor is bullshit. I just mean more of like the uncertainty of the whole thing. You thought something was one way for 25 years and then it wasn't. What's to say that the life that I picture for myself, why does that have to be a certain way? Why not just say fuck it and go for it?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I understand why my parents didn't tell me, and maybe it's good that they didn't, because I'm happy with who I am and how my life is. Like, maybe it's, who knows how things would have changed if I had known before. But yeah, now it's just like, it doesn't really matter. So that's why I'm like, I'd rather just have it be out in the open. Like, it probably always should have been, but it's just weird to like bring that up to people.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I've never had a kid. I plan on having one someday, but I imagine it's pretty hard too as a parent to find the right time to bring that up. Just be like, you know, what do you want for dinner? Also, your dad's not your dad, but it's like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't know. Because you probably are assuming worst case scenario where, you know, your kid may resent you, or, you know, maybe you don't want them to try to find that person, or I don't know what was going on in their head, because I'm on them. Mm-hmm. But it's just like a lot of uncertainty that makes it harder to start that conversation.
For sure. Yeah. And I don't hold any resentment for them or anything for that, but it's like, come on, like a person's got to know who they are. Like, you're growing up and trying to figure out who you are and what you're supposed to do in this world, and you don't even know the most basic fact about who you are and why you're here. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I mean, if tonight, if I found out that my dad was not my biological dad, it would make me question a whole bunch of shit. You know, because there are things that I assume that I get from my dad. And then if genetically my dad isn't a part of me, then I'd be wondering, okay, like, what is the person like that put that there? Or where does this shit come from? Or these impulses that I always thought were, you know, just passed down from my dad, or talents or whatever. There was someone else that was a part of that too. Not saying that your dad wasn't part of the things that were passed down to you, but just genetically, there are some things that, whether you like it or not, are just who you are. It's,
oh, 100%. Like, looking back, some things make a lot of sense. Like, it's like, okay, yeah, that, because I mean, I don't look that much like him, even something as simple as that. But yeah, just as far as like music, I'm huge into music. Like, my dad isn't really a big music guy, like, you know, things like that. But yeah, everyone, I think, should consider taking one of those tests, because they say that you never know what you'll find. And there, it is maybe kind of sketchy to give your genetic information to a private company like that. So I can see why people may hesitate to do that, but you seriously never know what you can find. And the weird thing for me is, like, I don't know anyone else personally who's taken one of those tests. So it's pretty interesting that, like, I was driven to go and buy this test and take it when, like, I was the one that actually had something to find out.
Yeah. My parents actually have a story like that, where I think it was my dad who sent in a test on 23andMe before the shutdown started, and found out that he has a living half sibling that lives within 15, 20 minutes. And I haven't spoken to him about this in a while. And it was terrible timing, because everything kind of lined up where they were possibly going to meet, and then the coronavirus happened. So it kind of threw everything off kilter. But I remember my dad told me about it. He's like, yeah, I did this test and it came back that I was a high percentage match with someone else that had taken the 23andMe test and found out that they were half siblings. I was like, that's fucking wild that you could take a test just unknowingly.
Yeah, it's wild that they can do that, and it's wild to find out.
Yeah, so now I'm excited and nervous to take a test. I'll eventually bite the bullet and, you know, see what happens.
Yeah, it's just something I would have never expected and no one would expect.
So something I think would be good to end on is you mentioned that you've been big into self-improvement the past few years and you've been adjusting some habits to make yourself better. So I was wondering, what are the most beneficial habits for you that have made the biggest impact on your life in the past 3 to 5 years that you've adopted?
Yeah, I mean, that's one reason I've enjoyed listening to The Ox is because you talk about a lot of bits like that. It's really helpful. It's just short 5-10 minute things that a lot of the stuff you talk about are things I'm already doing, or sometimes I learn some new bits too.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, one that I know that you share is the Sam Harris waking up app for meditation is just phenomenal. And I'm curious, have you ever used any other meditation apps? Like there's Calm and Headspace.
I tried Insight Timer for a little bit, which is straight timer with some background music, no guided meditation. I think I tried if Headspace has the free trial, either that or Calm. I can't remember which one I did, but I tried 10% Happier with Dan Harris.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that just wasn't for me. And then I tried Sam Harris and did his 50 course on ramp, where it kind of just started out mm-hmm. with a few minutes here and there. And then gradually I listened to his podcast too a lot before, and his voice just, you know, put me in a comfortable state for some reason. Like he has a semi-psychedelic voice. I can't even describe it, like where he's
and
talking.
And just the clarity that he speaks with too.
Yeah. He speaks in perfect prose, where if you were to write something, he wouldn't even have to edit what he's saying to write it. It's just, you take it from his mouth and it's ready to go, ready to be published. Everything he says. But no, I haven't tried the other ones besides Sam Harris.
Have you ever done a longer meditation, like more than 10 or 20 minutes?
I've done 30 minutes and I've done an hour a couple of times.
Okay. Yeah. When I was in Italy, I went and it was like an hour or 2 hours where they were like banging a gong really slowly. And that was really cool. And then I had signed up.
That was inside. Like that was an in-person meditation. You weren't listening.
Yeah. There were like 20 people in there, but I was like, I think I was the only one who regularly meditates with Sam Harris's app. And I closed my eyes. I didn't open them for like 45 minutes. Finally, when I opened them, everyone else around me is just laying down. I'm like, what the fuck are you guys doing? You just came here to sleep.
Yeah. Like, come on, you fucking, you chumps. Get with it, sit up.
But then I had also signed up for, I was going to do one of those 10-day meditation things. And I ended up not going. I just was too busy. I'm like, I still would like to do it some other time. But it was really interesting because then a few months later, it was the first episode of Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard that I had ever listened to. He had Drew Carey on. And Drew Carey was talking about how he went to one of these. And I'm pretty sure it was the same one that I would have went to. So I'm like, fuck, that would have been unreal to be meditating with Drew Carey for 10 days.
That would be crazy.
I don't know why. Yeah, he went to this one in Wisconsin that I was going to go to. I don't know why he came here, but that would have been nuts.
I imagine it's a broad cast of characters because there's so many different types of people that are interested in meditation. And it's not like you know who's going to be in the group before. And it's not like they screen people. Like if Will Smith or Drew Carey signs up for meditation, it's not like they tell everyone else in the group, like, just so you know, Will Smith's going to be here this week. You just show up and they're and then there.
Yeah. And you're not supposed to talk. So I wouldn't have been able to get that out of my head the whole time.
Like, okay. Drew Carey's right there. It was a 10-day silent retreat.
Yeah. I mean, there's minimal talking, but it's mostly just silent, which would be, they say it, everyone that goes, when I read reviews, it's like, the hardest thing you've ever done, but at the same time, like the most rewarding, which I'm sure that's the case.
Yeah. I recently spoke to a guy named Coleman Hughes, who has a podcast named Conversations with Coleman. And he actually spoke to Sam Harris for his first episode. And he talks about meditation and he's been on silent retreats before. And he said that he experienced this almost like his skin was on fire, but it felt good. And it was just, I don't want to put words in his mouth because I don't remember exactly what he said about the experience, but it sounded like even if you don't learn something about yourself that's new, if you go on a silent meditation retreat, a truth that you already know will become deeper. It just sounded like the things that you know, and maybe the things that you know are true, and maybe you kind of aren't paying attention enough, you'll come away from that retreat knowing, okay, like this truth is undeniable now. And if I don't do this, I'll be a piece of shit, or I need to pay more attention to this, or whatever it is. So I'm definitely interested.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you sit there for 10 days, some weird shit's going to happen in your brain.
Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely be open. I don't know if I would start with a 10-day retreat, but I would definitely be open to a weekend silent meditation retreat. And I forget what company he said does it, but I think they offer weekend retreats, 10-day retreats, a male or female retreats, mixed, whatever. If people want to, like, whatever people want to do, they basically have that option. So I think I would definitely start with the weekend retreat first and then see how things go.
Yeah. Another one that I've been big on is cold showers. Just phenomenal.
Love cold showers.
Every day it's...
I took one before this
every
podcast.
Every day it's a challenge. Well, I had a cheat shower today. I heard you coin that phrase. And I thought that was genius. Where it's like one warm shower a week. It's your cheat shower. I do it when I got to shave because it just makes it so much easier.
Yeah, yeah. Now I don't even really track it. I just do cold showers almost every single day. And maybe once every week or week and a half, I'm just like, oh, I could really use a warm shower right now. Because I don't listen to music when I'm taking a cold shower because it's so short. So it's like, why would I go through the speaker? Why do I go through the trouble of putting on my speaker for one song in the shower and charging my Bluetooth? But now it's like a whole process where I'm like, okay, tonight I'm going to take a warm shower. I'm going to have my playlist ready to go. It's going to be 30 minutes, 45 minutes. I'm going to just be in the shower and just listen to some good music. And it's like a whole event now where I really appreciate it more. It's like, it really feels like a cheat shower. I'm like, oh wow, it's a pleasure. I'm grateful to be in this warm water right now.
Yeah. I mean, every day with the cold shower, it's never easy. Like every time you're trying to talk yourself out of it, it's just something you got to fucking do, but then you do it and you feel better and everything else the rest of the day is so much easier. And then you said it's something that you don't track really. It actually is something I track. I actually kind of track everything. Have you ever heard of the app Dailyo?
Mm-mm. Dailyo? So
it's Dailyo. Yeah, like Daylio. Mm-hmm. I've been using this for 2.5 years where every day at the end of the day or the next morning, I have like, you can create your own categories. Like I have one for, did I take a cold shower today? Did I meditate today? Did I do music burrito stuff? Did I work out? Did I drink coffee? Did I get drunk? Was I hungover? I mean, everything. I just track like down to the T. And it's really cool after a few years to be able to go look at like your year-end statistics and stuff. And there's also, you can put in like your mood for the day. So you can see like if there's a correlation between, oh, I worked out today and I had a good mood. Maybe I should do that more or whatever. And also I'll write like a little 3-5 sentence thing about what I actually did that day. And that's been super useful too. Like if I ever need to go back and figure out, you know, if I ask you what you did on April 21st, 2019, like you have no fucking idea.
Yeah, no, I like the idea of tracking your habits. I use, you said wait, it's called Dailyo and it's an electronic app where you can see the statistics and stuff like that. So I'm sure you've heard of James Clear, the guy who wrote Atomic Habits.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading that book. It's high on my list.
Oh, dude, it's sick. I just finished it probably a month ago. I can't wait to read it again at some point in the future. But he has this thing called the Habit Tracker, which is, it's manual. It's a physical journal. And I don't really use the journal aspect because I have another daily journal that I write in, and I use the Daily Stoic journal by Ryan Holiday, but he has a habit tracker in it where you basically pre-write your habits for the month. And I guess cold shower, I just didn't write down just because it's so like ingrained at this point that I didn't even think about it when I was writing it, but I'll write like morning meditation, read for 30 minutes today, watch TV for less than 30 minutes, watch porn, whatever the fuck I'm trying to like work on that month to make sure I can either enforce a positive habit or take away a negative habit. And so it actually is really powerful. And I'm sure you have it on the Dailyo app too, but to go back for the whole month, because every page is 1 month. So you have 30, 31 slots. And to see, okay, all these X's, how many times did I do this?
Yeah.
How did I fuck up this? And the thing I like about it is that you can go back and look at, okay, I nailed every habit except reading for 30 minutes. How can I make that? And James Clear goes over this in his book too. But if you're trying to enforce a good habit, you want to make it as attractive to yourself as possible. And you want it to be visible to you. And you want to make it as like a seamless a transition from your daily routine into that habit. So it's like, okay, why am I not reading 30 days? Why am I not reading 30 minutes every day? Why did I only do that for 15 days out of the month? So like, how can I do that? Do I leave a book on my pillow before I go to bed? I see that. Do I put a timer on my phone? Because if you know it's good for you, you know you have an incentive to do it. So it's personal to everyone to figure it out. Okay, how can I make this habit as most attractive as possible? Like something that I changed recently is taking my vitamins. I would forget to take vitamins, and I bought this pill holder where I would kind of just, and I take my vitamins with lunch. So I put them in this kind of like pill case, and I just put it on top of the bread in my fridge because I usually have a peanut butter sandwich. So it's like, okay, I literally can't make lunch now without seeing it. So, and that was a super small thing that now makes me do it every day. It wasn't that I didn't want to do it or I wasn't motivated. It was just like, I literally was not visually reminding myself. So it's kind of cool to go back through and experiment. Okay, what can I do to make this habit more obvious to where I do it every day?
Yeah, I mean, all these things are small things like that that just add up over time. And it seems like so many people don't do them because they don't have the time. They'd rather just like work a little longer so they can get more money. And it's like, I think if you do all these things consistently, like over time, it can translate to more money in other ways or just more happiness too. Just another big one that I do is wheel pose. Do you know that for yoga? It's like where you just go back like this on the floor and like your hands and feet are on the floor.
Yeah.
Like I just do that like two or three times a day. I haven't had time to work out recently, like with mulch and everything. But if I just do that two or three times a day, it just makes me feel so much better. It helps my posture so much. I think posture is fucking huge. Mine got terrible when I was working the desk job, and that's just been huge for me. And then one more is flossing. It's a pretty random one, but I've been flossing after every meal for like since the end of college, basically. It's just a habit. It's like you just do it and now you don't have to worry about it anymore. If I don't floss, I'm sitting there for like hours just using my tongue to try to dig shit out of my teeth, and it just drives me nuts. It's like just do it right when you're done and it's over with.
Yeah, definitely. That's something I need to get better at, flossing, because then I just fucking pick my teeth with my nails and try to dig it out. The wheelbarrow is interesting, though. How long do you hold it when you do it, and how many times?
I'll hold it for like 3 minutes, and I'll like keep creeping my hands closer and closer to my feet to the point where they're touching. So I'm like a straight fucking circle. Like,
no way.
I've been able to get closer and closer. Yeah, I've been doing it for like a year. It's pretty nuts. And yeah, that just makes me feel amazing. And it makes me feel amazing now. And I know it'll make me feel amazing in the future. Like I see those old guys who are walking around so slouched over. Like I don't ever want to fucking be that guy. That sounds terrible. So take care of yourself now and you'll be happier now and in the future.
Yeah, That's something I should probably look into, because one of the things that I've started doing recently in the morning is just doing the almost like a Sphinx pose, where it's not, I'm not doing a wheelbarrow. It's almost like I'm on my stomach, but I'm like pushing myself, like pinching my shoulders back and pushing myself up and holding that for 20 seconds. And I'll do that 5 or 6 times. And I'm also trying to get rid of a lower back injury, which I think is a slightly bulging disc based on my WebMD quarantine diagnosis going through YouTube videos. But it actually is getting better. But yeah, like the wheelbarrow makes sense because...
Wheel pose, it's called.
Wheel pose. That makes sense because, like you said, if you're at a desk job or, you know, you're not used to... You're not doing manual labor where you're kind of like in a sedentary position all day. Your shoulders slash forward. Like, even I have to remind myself during a podcast, like, sit up straight because your body just naturally will, like, cave in forward and your core kind of, like, shrivels up and you make this... like yeah. C with your body where you're just like your shoulders hang over.
It's the perfect antidote to that.
Your shoulders hang over your knees. So it's like, okay, that position is going to completely invert that. It's like the opposite of what people are doing. So it makes sense to counter it.
One more random thing I wanted to ask you, because I know you big baseball guy, you played in college and stuff. So where I'm from, like we have all these little towns around like other small towns that are like basically have a bar, a church, and a baseball field, which it's just fucking awesome. Like I played for a few years right after high school, and I was just curious, like, do you have opportunities like that in New York to continue playing in a setting like that if you wanted to?
There are definitely leagues that I could join that are adult baseball leagues or softball leagues, but it's not the same feel as town baseball field church. That I don't think you will get close to the city. You'll have to go upstate for that. But I did play in a summer league called Coastal Plains League in college in Martinsville, Virginia, which is literally that was the makeup of the town. It was a baseball field, which we sold out almost every single night because that's the only fucking thing to do in Martinsville, Virginia, was go watch the Mustangs play baseball. So we'd have like 1,500 people, which is sick. There was a church, there was a Walmart, and there was an Applebee's that would just, the Applebee's would convert from a family restaurant to Thursday nights, super ratchet, people like twerking on the bar. It was like their fucking, like Applebee's would turn into a club for the weekend. It was kind of funny to watch, but yeah, I can definitely do that.
That's awesome.
I'm looking for opportunities like that right now where it's been 26 now. So 3.5 years since I played competitively. And I'm more in a rhythm now where I'm doing the podcasting and working. So it doesn't feel like whenever you start something, it always takes like more work at the beginning to get in that rhythm. But now I'm definitely at the point where I want to consider, okay, what's something I can do competitively, whether it's baseball or jiu-jitsu or just like something in my life that, because like podcasting, it's more like you're competing with yourself. You're trying to be better every time you do it and you're trying to improve. But there's nothing like when you step on the mound in baseball where you're just like, I'm going to own this motherfucker. I'm going to mow this bitch down, strike out the side. And there's nothing really like that outside of sports. So even if it's not at the college or professional level, I think it would still be beneficial to do something where you're just like, you know, once a week tapping into that competitive spirit and being like, all right, I don't, this dude, whatever, he's fucking 45, sucks at baseball, but I'm still going to try to mow him down.
Yeah. I mean, it's the camaraderie of being with the guys. It's competition. It's you're being active, but it is just a big time commitment.
Yeah. I want to say thank you again for taking the time to hop on the podcast. I really appreciate it. This conversation has been a blast. And I thoroughly enjoyed the music burrito and will continue to enjoy the music burrito. And I know that it will evolve into something that you will be able to choose full time should you want to, because you guys are, you can tell you're super meticulous about the episodes, the way you set it up. You obviously prepare a lot. And so I'm sure you're going to have the Jones Mulch Service option and the Music Burrito option, and you'll be able to choose how much you want to do both in the future while you're going to yacht week on the Amalfi Coast with your Italian girlfriend, working from Wi-Fi on the yacht, recording episodes.
Oh, wow. That sounds fantastic. Yeah, that would be the ultimate goal. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love mulching, but if I could just do the podcast, that'd be sweet. And yeah, thank you for having me on. I mean, we're obviously a pretty new thing. We don't have a huge following yet, but hopefully we can continue to grow. I think a lot of your listeners are into music. So our show, like I said, we do a bunch of different types of artists. So I think there should be something for everyone, even if you're only listening to one episode a month that grabs your attention. We hope we can get people who they start to like our personalities so much that they'll listen to other episodes that they wouldn't have normally listened to and discover new bands. Like, mm-hmm. I love when someone tells me that, oh, that segment two of that episode was fucking hilarious. But it means even more to me if someone says, oh, hey, ever since I heard that Chris Stapleton podcast, I can't stop listening to him. Like, we want to get people into the music. That's our ultimate goal. But we try to make it really entertaining for the listener along the way. We try to be funny, and we give a lot of interesting information. I think if you like to learn stuff about songs and artists that you wouldn't normally know, I think we do a good job of that. That's the goal.
Yeah, man. For people that are listening to this right now, before you shut off this podcast and sext your girlfriend or go jerk off or whatever you're going to do, go check out an episode of the Music Burrito. Just go through the playlist and find an artist that sticks out to you and just listen to an episode. And I promise you will get hooked and become a regular listener. So, and you're right. Personality is so important. The Spotify didn't pay Joe Rogan $100 million because of his expertise in podcasting, even though he is an expert at this point. It's the personality that he communicates to his listeners and the following and just like the audience that he's been able to gather. And you guys are definitely doing that at your own level. And I look forward to watching it grow.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Auxoro. If you haven't already, please hit us with a 5-star rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. This helps us appear higher in searches, which means more people will find out about Auxoro. Other ways to help get the word out is telling a friend, tagging us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, writing a blog post, or supporting us with a donation on Patreon. We are a completely independent platform, and we're grateful for every listener who supports this podcast. Thanks for coming along for the ride, and I'll see you guys next time.